College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
With our anchorman, Paul Rasmussen, and we are joined by retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst. A lot to discuss. Colonel, good morning.
Larry, good morning to you, sir.
As you are acutely aware, there are a number of issues when it comes to the military with the new, the new Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, and of course, Donald Trump in his second term. One of the things he talked about was the Iron Dome defense system that has worked well for Israel. He would like to see it deployed for us and our protection here in the United States. For those that don't know, please describe what the Iron Dome system is in Israel first.
Well, the Iron Dome system in Israel is an air defense system designed to intercept particularly missiles, rockets, cruise missiles that are launched against Israel. And that was very successful in the last little over a year that Israel was engaged in conflict with Hamas and also with Hezbollah in Lebanon, as well as with Iran on two different exchanges of ballistic missiles. And largely, those particular systems were defeated, though there was, in fact, some damage. But one has to think, of course, that the geographic problem, at least, amongst others, is quite different between the United States and Israel. Israel is about the size of New Jersey, more or less, whereas you're now talking about the same sort of a defense system that would stretch across the entirety of the United States, to include Alaska, oh, by the way, and don't forget Hawaii and Guam and Puerto Rico and other places like that. So the scale of the problem is quite much more significant when you talk about it for the United States.
Colonel McCausland, what the executive order says from the White House on this topic, it says the U.S. will deploy and maintain a next-generation missile defense shield designed to protect the U.S. from all types of missile strikes. Is that possible? Do the experts think that doable?
Well, it might be technologically possible, because to understand the challenge, as most engineers describe this in the years I've been involved with this, because this also harkens back, oh, by the way, to Ronald Reagan in the 1980s and his proposal for a similar system that was dubbed Star Wars. But what you're trying to do is have a bullet hit a bullet. That's, in essence, what you're doing in terms of trying to defeat ballistic missiles that are launched against the United States. And we do have a minimum defense system right now, and that is about 44 interceptors that are spread between Vandenberg Air Force Base out in California and Alaska. The primary reason for these systems, most people believe, is to defend us against a rogue state that would launch a small attack. Think North Korea, think perhaps Iran in the future. But now when you scale that across the whole country, of course, it becomes a bigger problem. And our problem is much more severe than Israel's, not only in terms of the size of territory, but also the type of systems that we are going to have to defeat. Israel was trying to defeat Hezbollah and Iran system. We're talking about much more sophisticated intercontinental ballistic missiles launched by the Russian Federation, by China, which has a growing set of systems, as well as smaller countries like Iran, perhaps, or North Korea. And other weapon systems as well. Think of cruise missiles or perhaps in future weapons launched from space. All this might very well be technologically feasible, but then the other thing you have to think about is cost. And right now, Congress is wrestling with the FY25 defense budget, which was supposed to have been passed on 1 October, oh, by the way. But be that as it may, that budget will probably hit total national defense expenditures for the U.S. for FY25 of about $890 billion. Well, you can imagine a system like this for the whole country is going to add billions and billions of dollars to that total as we try to figure out how to balance budgets and pay for other things that the American people want.
We're with retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland. And as you know, four executive orders were signed by President Trump on Monday directly affecting the military. What will be some of the fallout, in your opinion, as you work through each of the details of these orders?
Well, of course, you talked about Star Wars, or I should say Iron Dome, I'm sorry. And that'll be an analysis of cost and feasibility. Then, of course, there was the announcement about eliminating any kind of diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, training, et cetera, throughout the U.S. military. some believe, Mr. Trump's Secretary of Defense, Hegseth, certainly, that this will make the military much more focused on lethality. On the other side of that particular coin, there are many people who worry that this will discourage young women, frankly, people of color, from joining the military. We know the military has already got enough problems with recruiting as well. The second thing was directing the Pentagon to do a review of transgender people in the military to see if, in fact, they could perform their duties, be deployed consistent with the challenge they have if they're undergoing some kind of therapy or medication, or et cetera. And I think that's just a precursor, quite frankly, to Mr. Trump once again banning transgender people in the military, which he did during his first term. The question then will become, how do you manage those people who are already in the military in terms of honorable discharges? Do they get their pay? And perhaps some court cases that may generate. And then finally, the president directed that those who had left the military, about 18,000, who refused the COVID mandate, these are people in uniform, that they would be reinstated and receive their back pay. So far, that particular mandate was removed by President Biden. We've only seen about 100 or so people actually return to the military. So there's an open question, again, of how many of them will, in fact, return, number one. Number two, if they don't return, do they still receive their back pay? And number three, is this kind of a one-off decision for this particular once-in-a-century pandemic? Or are we saying every soldier, sailor, airman, Marine needs to decide which vaccinations he does or does not get? And that would be, I think, almost catastrophic in terms of readiness and deployment. I point out to people that George Washington forced the Continental Army to be vaccinated against smallpox because we had seen throughout history armies decimated by disease every bit as much as decimated by bullets.
A lot to sort through in the future. Thanks for putting some fine strokes on what this means. In the meantime, Colonel, thank you.
Take care, Larry.
All right. Retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst.
Boy, he's sharp, isn't he? He really knows what he's talking about. Getting back to Secretary Hegseth and the role of women in combat, he wants that to stop. I'm curious to know how many women are in potential combat roles, particularly in the Navy and the Army.
Well, there have been women who have been in combat in Afghanistan and Iraq, too.
You know, we've had pilots, I know.
One thing I'm curious, what is the percentage of transgender in the military? It's got to be pretty small.
A sliver, yeah.
Sliver. So the bigger question is really women in a combat
That's what
role.
I think. That's what I think. And I wonder, is the defense secretary, he says he doesn't support women being in combat, but is he going to be able to stop women from playing a role in combat? Don't know that.
No shortage of topics.
Right?
Yeah, so we'll keep you posted.
One flurry of big stories after another. I mean, the question I have to ask myself today, Larry, is what surprise are we going to get from Washington today?
And you have the new White House spokesperson, Caroline Leavitt, and I'm wondering if she's sitting there going, wow, there's no shortage of things to discuss. So we'll keep you posted here on the Big K Morning Show. In this day and age of divisiveness, you might wonder, can we ever just work together for bipartisan good of everybody? Well, here in Pennsylvania, some good, a bipartisan pair of Allegheny County lawmakers pushing a create a statewide paid family and medical leave program. Nearly 4 million state residents don't have access to such benefits. And joining us, representing the 21st Legislative District, Representative Lindsey Powell. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's encouraging to many of us to hear that you can work together sometimes for the good of everybody. So talk us through why you thought there was such a need on Monday, and what are the odds of this really getting a foothold?
Absolutely. To your point, bipartisanship is so critically important in this day and age, and I'm so grateful to have the support of colleagues across the aisle pushing for paid family medical leave insurance. It is so important that we have policy and legislation that ensures that family can take care of family, whether it's a new mom and dad being able to spend time with their newborns, whether it's grandparents having the ability to take care of a son or daughter recovering from serious illness, we know in times of great trouble and turbulence, people want to be with their families. And this legislation, we believe, is a common sense change that is pro-family and pro-business that allows for people to take paid time off as they see fit to take care of their beloved families.
So how will this work in a practical world? Please give us an example.
Sure. So our legislation for paid family medical leave insurance is funded by a small employee payroll reduction. We wanted to make sure that the legislation, again, made sense for small businesses, that it wasn't a burden to them. We also know that this ability to take time off and take paid time off is job security for so many people. When they're faced with difficulty, when they're faced with a serious illness or the beautiful joy of having a new baby, they have to decide, are they going to, not spend time with their loved ones, not spend that critical time or leave their jobs. Those folks often have to seek other public funded subsidies like unemployment or public assistance programs that additionally drain the Pennsylvania economy. And so providing this, small employee payroll reduction deduction allows for them to take the paid leave off that they need without overburdening the system.
Lindsay, I'm curious to know about the status of the bill in the House and also what's your assessment of support for it in the Senate?
We have had growing support. It has been so wonderful to see, again, folks from different walks of life see the need for this program. As you said, nearly 4 million Pennsylvanians don't have access to paid family medical leave. And so with the support of stakeholders, small businesses who want to provide this for their employees, we are seeing growing support for the legislation look forward to it finally passing and being signed on Governor Shapiro's desk.
So what's the timeline? Best case scenario?
Best case scenario, it continues to grow in support in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. It goes to the Senate, where we have, again, colleagues that are invested in supporting its legislation. So I'm a hopeful person. I'm hoping that by the end of this legislative session, we'll be able to say that it is a law in Pennsylvania and that we are keeping up with the competition as several of our neighboring states also offer paid family leave.
And while we have you, we're with Lindsay Powell, State Representative, Legislative 21st District. What are your concerns about a potential pause now of federal monies that would have a trickle-down effect here in the state of Pennsylvania? Right now, President pausing the grants and loans programs, and then a federal judge pausing that pause, so we might not know where it's going till, at best case, next Monday.
Yeah, it's a deep concern of ours. We've had several constituents call our office and reach out looking for clarity. And unfortunately, as you said, we are also looking for clarity. And so it is imperative, it is important to our office that we're able to provide our constituents and our neighbors with up-to-date reassurances that the benefits that they deeply need, that take care of their families, that make sure that they can put food on the table exist. And so we are just as concerned as the next person and hoping that we have clarity so that we can provide our neighbors with that same reassurance.
Representative Lindsay Powell, appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We'll see where this goes in Harrisburg for this particular act. Just while we had her, Paul wanted to ask about, I'm sure everybody's kind of waiting to see
right
what the impact of these grants and loans pause could be if then after the federal judge reviews these, what, next Monday?
Right. They'll hear oral arguments from both sides on this, and then we'll get some idea of where we're going next.
All right. We are coming up. In the next hour, we're going to have a visit. Marty's wife, Christine Sorensen, KDK TV anchorwoman, will join us. And also, this is Chinese New Year, the lunar holiday. And
Year of the Snake.
Year of the Snake. And that may sound like a bad thing, right, to some people, because snakes have been long demonized since Adam and Eve, right?
Right.
It was that snake told him to, you know, to told Eve, right?
I just, you know, I don't enjoy snakes. You know, I think, aren't we all in the same box here?
Yes, yeah. I think so.
Yeah, you don't bring a snake into the studios. I don't want any part of that.
However, in the Lunar New Year, there are some positive attributes.
As a symbol, well, that's another thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Happy New Year. Marty Griffin, 10 until 2, followed by Colin Dunlap. And on your way home, check out The Drive at 5, top stories every weekday afternoon at 5 p.m., brought to you by Service Master of Greater Pittsburgh, Demand the Yellow Van, The Drive at 5 on KDKA. And every other Wednesday at this time, we are joined by President and CEO of the Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh, Carlos T. Carter. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Good. As you prepare for a new year, you've got your annual event coming up. Let's start there. Tell us about the gala.
Yeah, so it's our 29th annual RHB, Ronald H. Brown Gala, and our theme is Our Time to Thrive. It's going to be on March 21st, Friday, March 21st at 5:30 at the Westin. You don't want to miss it. It's a great event where we celebrate great leaders that we'll talk a little more. We'll talk more about later. We'll celebrate great leaders who are making a difference, creative Pittsburgh, where everyone can thrive. There'll be dinner and dancing and moments that will inspire you to move the mission forward. It's great networking connection. We also remember and celebrate the life of the late great Ronald H. Brown, who was the first Black Secretary of Commerce, who was committed to breaking barriers and creating economic opportunity for all Americans. I think this event is important as it raises money to support the critical work of the Urban League to remove barriers and create equity and opportunity for everyone. You know, we've been in this market for over 106 years, you know, helping people with housing, jobs, really moving people to economic self-sufficiency. Even you see the families, you know, impacting the East Hills with the housing. The Urban League is involved with that. So we're there really, you know, just trying to make a difference. And so it's going to be a vibrant evening where purpose meets celebration. You will make, you know, great new connections. You'll feel good about helping create a thriving Pittsburgh for all. So we definitely want to see you there.
And did I hear Charlie Batch and his wife, Latasha, are among the honorees?
Yes, the best of the batch will be in the house. You know, Charlie is a former board member. They're both great people who do just incredible work in the community. I've toured their, you know, their clubhouse, just amazing people. They'll be there, so we're happy to celebrate them. Dan Honorato, the Highmark executive and former county executive, doing great work for health equity and, you know, in this community. Dante Green, who's the executive director of the Trade Institute of Pittsburgh and also head coach for Westinghouse High School. He's our emerging leader. That's something we created a few years ago. Latrinda Sherrell, the owner of Common Cause. She does a lot of great civic engagement work. And finally, Marimba Malines, who's the president and CEO of the Hill CDC, doing a lot of work and development in the Hill District. And all these people are great Americans who happen to be Pittsburghers who are really helping to make an impact, and we wanted to certainly celebrate them.
That's a pretty impressive list. And by the way, for those that don't know, Charlie's Steel Valley hometown guy, obviously played for the Steelers and continues to do work with the team. But the work that he's most passionate about, he and his wife, with the best of the batch, working with our kids that really need a hand and guidance. And so salute to Charlie. And Carlos, you know, Charlie is also going to be inducted into the WPIA Hall of Fame 2019. He was in now the National High School Football Hall of Fame, which is a really big deal. So he's having quite a year.
Wow, I didn't know that. So we look forward to celebrating him further. And so, you know, people want to get involved. The website will be up on the first one. We have a website, but I mean the event website. But if you're looking to sponsor, we need sponsors or get a ticket, please email srking@ulpgh.org, srking@ulpgh.org. And then on February 1st, we'll have it on our website where people can do things virtually, ulpgh.org. And so, we want to see you there. It's one of the best events in the city. I don't say that because I'm a leader. I went there 5 times before I was a leader. I always thought it was amazing. But you have over 400 people there, great live auction items. But just, it's just a fun party, but just celebrating the great work. And we're, you know, we'll be telling great stories of the impact here. And people will be inspired and feel good, right, that they're helping to support an organization that's an institution that's really impacting from our seniors to our young people from cradle to grave, really, you know, removing barriers so people can thrive. That's what it's about, right, creating a Pittsburgh where we all thrive, because as MLK said we're all tied together, right? If one, if something is impacting one, it impacts all. And so this is a way for you to impact all in a positive way.
ulpgh.org. Carlos T. Carter, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you so much, Larry. Be blessed.
Center here when you need us. You don't need it this morning. You might later. Brought to you by ServiceMaster of Greater Pittsburgh, Demand the Yellow Van, and Butler Transit Authority. I'm looking forward to tonight, the resumption of the Pittsburgh Speaker Series presented by the University of Pittsburgh. And
who's on stage?
The Spanos Group of Raymond James and KDKA Radio. Tonight, it's Oren Etzioni, not a household name, but he is widely considered to be one of the most in tune with artificial intelligence people on the planet.
And well, that's going to be a good Q&A session.
He went to Carnegie Mellon University, as well as Harvard, and he is the founder of a group that's, you know, it's all about artificial intelligence. And he has some, because he gets questions, right, as soon as they find out what his expertise is. And I love some of his quotes. AI is a tool. The choice about how it gets deployed is ours. And AI is neither good or evil. It is just that, a tool, a technology for us to use, just like anything else, right? You can, how you use it, it in and of itself.
Not only that, but also how it's constructed. You know, for example, the artificial intelligence chatbots. Is that what they're called? Chatbots?
Chat, yeah.
Yeah. So if you enter information in, you want to know more about something with, say, for example, ChatGPT, you're also going to get, the algorithms are based on the people who are programming the information. You're getting their point of view on things.
And it's not flawless.
Exactly. And I'm not saying that that can be, that's neither good nor bad. It can be helpful or it can be unhelpful depending on what the motive of the person is. But it's the same exact principle again. Just like social media, you can use it for good or for evil.
And he was asked about, do you think machines will take over the world? He said, that's like asking if a calculator will just start calculating itself.
That's the best answer I've heard yet. I don't go for artificial intelligence is going to take over the world and we're all doomed.
That's what they said.
That's
about
that Y2K kind of talk.
MTV, they said the same thing about it. Now they don't even play music videos. Meanwhile, so DeepSeek threw everybody a curveball.
And this will be got to be a topic tonight.
Absolutely. This is going to come out because it cost NVIDIA $600 billion loss in a day.
Wow.
The largest ever in the history of a company. Now, they came back a little yesterday, but CBS's Anna Koren talks about DeepSeek in Hong Kong and China.
In the heart of Beijing, wrapped in glass and steel, sits an office on the fifth floor. We went to interview the CEO of DeepSeek, a Chinese AI company which until Monday was virtually unknown. As robots pass by cleaning the floor, our producer is told to leave. No filming here, he orders. But for the rest of the country, this is a moment of national pride. I'm so proud and feel so good, says this woman. With little fanfare and a fraction of the budget, Chinese startup DeepSeek released an AI model that performed as well or better than any in the West. Louis Garve has studied the Chinese economy for more than 30 years.
How did DeepSeek pull this off?
I think people are still trying to figure it out. I think what China's just proven is that if you build a 10-foot wall, they can invent an 11-foot ladder.
Shocking tech giants like OpenAI, Google, Amazon, and Meta, and tanking chipmaker NVIDIA stock on Monday.
What you just saw is China come in and said, hey, we can do AI as well. We can do AI as well, and we can do it for a fraction of the cost.
Since 2018, the U.S. has restricted the sale of high-end semiconductors and equipment to China. But despite the sanctions, DeepSeek has proven to be highly resourceful and innovative. Anna Koren, CBS News, Hong Kong.
So, and now we're hearing some people in the military are being advised not to download the app.
I was going to bring this up next.
For fears that it could open a security portal.
I have seen postings and read articles about this particular topic, which says if you download this DeepSeek app, you are giving them your IP address, access to your phone, et cetera. It's, you know, same kind of worries that we had about TikTok, remember?
Right. And that was, originally, it was Donald Trump that wanted TikTok banned. He's changed his tune, apparently. But this is another Chinese company with maybe an even more invasive opportunity to steal your information and somehow use your stuff either against us down the road. So we're going to get an expert on DeepSeek.
Yeah, I really want to hear what he has to say when we get back together again.
Well, I'm going to talk to, his name is Oren Etzioni, tonight, and I will ask him.
Straight up, are you concerned about this app? Will you download it, or would you recommend against it? I'd like to hear his answer to that one.
That topic comes up tonight. Yeah. Is AI evil? That's the question he gets all the time. One of the things he said is that I think is interesting is how many of us are guilty of my mind is made up. Don't confuse me with the facts.
So true.
In other words.
Yep, so true. You know, don't make me rearrange what I already think. Right.
Right.
No.
Don't let facts change my own reality.
But, you know, but the truth is, Larry, when we're learning, we're, you know, uncomfortable, but being uncomfortable is being part of a growing person.
Listen, you got to embrace change. If you don't, you got a long road ahead, because the only constant in life is change.
And so that's why I'm still looking for an appropriate use for AI in my work. How can I make that work for me, but still turn out the work I do?
How do I know it's you actually talking now?